Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome, Daisy Buchanan, the author and journalist. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hello. I want to call you Deliciously Stella. It all sounds like a formal full. Hi there, Deliciously Stella, but I'll call you Bella. Hello, Bella. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. So this episode of Deliciously Stella on the Job is going to be all about what it's like to be a writer. So have you always wanted to be a writer?
I think I have. I definitely toyed with... When I was a kid, I was really fat and I was bullied a lot and I had no friends. I spent quite a lot of time in my head thinking about, you know, my wonderful and glittering future. So that's my excuse, my extreme childhood egotism. But yeah, definitely. I suppose, you know, just making up stories, even the really nerdy writing I loved when I was younger, you know, sort of history essays, anything to sort of get my teeth into. And it just seemed to be the place where I always made the most sense. And I think that's it. I'd be a bit weird and off-putting in person, but then I'd write something down and people like, yes, I like the writing. I suppose that sort of led me in that direction.
It is my greatest shame in life that I didn't take history GCSE, and it means that I don't know anything at all, and it's so embarrassing.
Did you do geography? Did you do the colouring in one?
I did Latin.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, so I did Latin. I think I got an A, so I wasn't terrible.
And I bet Latin comes up all the time, and there's, you know, an inscription on something, or it's in Only Connect, and you're like, yes, I know this, and you feel like the cleverest person in the world, which you probably are.
Yeah.
My parents actually tried to teach me Latin, because they both did it at school and they thought it was the worst thing in the world that we didn't get taught it, and that was like the shame of parents' evenings, was they would, you know, basically harangue every single teacher. They're like, it's a shame there's no Latin. Well, I do PE, I wouldn't know. And then I broke my leg when I was 11, and it's quite a dramatic fracture and it took some time to heal, so I was like immobile, I couldn't run away, and they used that time to try to teach me Latin.
We used to have this amazing Latin teacher who had really, really long hair, and when she turned around people used to cut it.
Oh my god,
we were absolute horrors.
How long are we talking?
I mean, so long, like past the bum long.
And did she not notice?
I don't think so.
What did people do with that? Did you do it?
I didn't do it. I was better than that.
So did people come with scissors for fun to see how much hair they could get? Was it a competition? Did you measure it afterwards?
Yeah, absolutely. People used to love it. They used to just stuff it in envelopes, got a little bit of a keepsake. So weird.
I did know a kid when I did musical theatre briefly as a hobby. Oh god, bless him. He was adorable, but he was a nerd like me, and he had kind of Napoleon Dynamite hair. It's very, very curly, very ginger, very, very full, and somebody set fire to it on the bus, and it was a full 5 minutes before he noticed.
Well,
I think someone else noticed before him and patted him out, but just imagine having so much hair that you don't realise when it's aflame.
somebody set his hair on fire. So back to topic. Did you study journalism?
No, I did an English literature degree, mm-hmm. But I did a lot of student journalism. And that was really fun. I think what I wanted to do, I knew that journalism, as I imagined it, was, you know, going and being really hard-hitting, and you start in like a local newsroom and break these amazing stories. And that wasn't quite what I wanted to do. And I read a lot of features writing in newspapers and magazines, but from a really early age. My parents weren't big magazine people, but they'd always get the Sunday supplements. God, this is middle class. Yeah. But, you know, so I'd read the things that fell out of the Times and the Telegraph and, you know, think, this is what I want to do, because sometimes I would read things that were really, really just funny or silly, and also, I think, totally informed my image of, you know, what I dreamed of. You know, I'd go to London, I was going to have a full-length, like, black leather trench coat. It was the style of the time.
Oh my God, amazing. And so where did you start out? You started out at Bliss magazine. Was that your first job?
Yes, I was an intern at Bliss. I was immediately after I graduated. To be honest, I didn't apply for journalism straight away. I'd done these sort of bits and pieces and lots of kind of very fun features for the student paper. I was on music for a bit, and then bar and restaurant, where I pissed about and I really went off brief, and rather than do the sort of, yes, I'm going and, you know, to review a restaurant like a regular person, I did a made up KFC one for Valentine's Day and just really silly things like that. Everyone else on that paper, they just seem to be, but, you know, and I love them, they're brilliant, and, you know, some of them are just doing absolutely amazing, fantastic things now, they're really, really talented, but they did all, you know, we'd chat and they'd be like, so I've got this internship, and it's my auntie's at the Independent, and so she's arranged me to do this thing, and I was just like, fuck, I don't have any aunties that are useful, or, you know, I can't do, I wouldn't know where to begin. Like, if I were to do an internship in the holidays, I don't really know anyone in London, and it's all in London, and where will I stay? And, like, this world is just beyond my reach. And then I was convinced that I was going to do badly in my degree, and I did better than I thought I was going to do.
Well done.
Hooray! Flukily, that happened. So I'd taken a job before I graduated because I thought, well, if I tell them, I'm, you know, expected to do all right, it'll be fine. And it's PR, and there is some writing in PR, and I will be doing press releases, and I will find a way of being creative, just like I did at the bar and restaurants. That was a lie. I lied to myself. I lied to the people who offered me the job. It was miserable and horrible and dreadful, and I got fired after about 8 months. And a very kind, we're letting you go. Well, you can just tell people that you're an intern. We'll give you a reference, but we really want you out of the building as soon as possible. So I went home with my tail between my legs, moved back in with mum and dad, worked at the same call centre I worked in my gap year. And obviously, there's no, like, I'm failing, I'm regressing, did a whole degree, and here I am, back again. But while I was doing that at home, I was applying for every single stupid, like, tiny internship I couldn't at the time. I had a boyfriend, he lived in London, and I was just thinking, I will figure it out. Basically, I was on the point of taking a job for a magazine, and they seemed really nice. They had a gym benefit, and it would have been a kind of earning more money than PR. But it was basically about facilities management in the office. So I'd be writing about, you know, filing cabinets, new phone systems. When I got a call from the editor at Bliss, where I'd had an interview for an internship, saying I'd like you to come in, and it was a real, do I take a job with a salary and a gym benefit and all these fun things that would make me a proper grown-up, or do I take a job where I'm writing about the Jonas Brothers and earning, I think I was earning like 20 quid a day to pay for my train fare? And that was really unusual to get an internship that sort of paid anything, and it wasn't just like,
I think that sounds like the dream.
Oh, it was. And honestly, the first year I pretty much, like, rolled out of bed singing every morning. And I had to, because I was staying with this boyfriend who lived in West London, and I had to get to the office in Tunbridge Wells, so it's like a 2-hour commute, so it was good to start positive. It was heaven. It was just so, I love that so many silly things were taken so seriously, but it was really serious as well. I felt very, very, very proud of the work I did there and the work we all did, because I loved writing for that audience. What was funny was, and I think I can say this now that Bliss is sadly no more, we were writing for an imaginary 16-year-old girl that didn't really exist. Basically, everybody who read Bliss was 12, but wanted to believe that they were cool and they were reading the magazine read by, you know, exciting older teenagers who were obviously reading Cosmopolitan if they were reading anything at all. And this is when they were still reading magazines. So to set this tone of writing for this person that doesn't really exist while writing for your readers, I think was a really fun, exciting challenge.
So you've got a really good way, I think, of writing for young women. Like, I think it's amazing. Like, how did that sort of come about? Like, you're an agony aunt, you've done all sorts of things like this.
To be honest, I think it started at Bliss, and I think it really helped knowing that, and sometimes we would get people coming in who would write for what they thought a teenager would want to hear. And it was just really tonally off, like, you know, someone pretending to be a cool aunt. Like, what are you doing? No. And I think I felt so strongly that all of the things I was writing about, and, you know, you're obviously not saying you can't talk about, you know, hangovers or, you know, career disasters, but, you know, the school, boyfriends and girlfriends, friendships, confidence. God, I love doing confidence speeches. I still do. And I remember thinking, I want this for me. Why is there no... I mean, there are, you know, really great magazines that tackle it really well. And I think that since I was at Bliss, that content has really sort of come on in leaps and bounds. And I think that, you know, there's a stronger idea of who that reader is. But needing the magazine that's not massively aspirational and isn't saying, well, you know, when you walk around your £1 million house and, you know, you're buying all these fancy things and living this way, and just speaking to that person and saying, I know what you're afraid of. I know you're worried that people are going to find you out, and you're worried about having good friends and being a good friend and all these very fundamental things. I think we never stop being teenagers. And when I wrote my book, plug, which is out in April.
Tell me about the book.
It's called How to Be a Grown Up. That's really what I was thinking, is it's a Bliss for slightly older, hopefully, you know, much older readers, all the things that our teenage selves needed to hear and that we need to hear now. And God, I don't have any answers, other than the fact that I have made so many hilarious, stupid mistakes, and nothing has actually killed me yet. And I think because I also grew up feeling very, very pressured and frightened of not being perfect, even when I was a terrible Poindexter nerd, I felt that I had to excel on every platform. And I think that's really common, especially for women. I think we are, and we don't act unless we've got everything absolutely right. You know, we're told to not kind of be daring or have a go. We're like very, you know, be polished and be unseen. And I think we don't hear enough that tells us we're good enough as we are, and that, you know, we should just laugh and have fun. And that's, I think, all I, you know, really want to supply. Like, if the book had a subtitle, it does have a subtitle, which will be, is to be confirmed. But my subtitle of choice would be like, you're all right. Don't worry. All right. It's fine. It's all going to be okay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, I need to talk about one of my favourite things that you do, which is your Made in Chelsea column in the Debrief, which I'm absolutely obsessed with. That you're an expert on Made in Chelsea.
Thank you.
How did you become an expert on Made in Chelsea? How does this happen?
Well, one thing that is really, really hilarious is a couple of years ago, a woman got in touch on Twitter to say that I think she's doing her MA in maybe, overall it's like film and TV, and she was writing about reality TV. And at the time, I was the only person to have published a book on the subject at all, because there was an ebook of my some of my Made in Chelsea reviews out there. So yeah, by just dint of finding my niche, the nichiest niche, I was the expert. I was like
such a
in
great
her
niche.
Sources, which such is a great niche. Just, you know, a joy. It made me very, very happy. I was a fan. I remember seeing the adverts of the show and thinking, oh my God, I'm going to hate this. These like terrible, privileged, whiny people. And then watched the very first one with people I was living with at the time, my old housemates. And, you know, we took the piss and had a lovely time. I was tweeting merrily along. And it was back in the days when Twitter was just quite jolly for the most part. Mm. You didn't sort of say anything without, you know, tens of people leaping on you being like, you're wrong. And you're fat, and you can't say this.
Oh my God, those trolls. I got told I was so annoying yesterday that someone wanted to punch me in the throat.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I was like, that's nice.
I mean, it's unbelievable how common that is. And I know we say it a lot, but you just would not do it to anyone you saw in the street. It's just, what gives people the... I don't know what has made people so uncivil, and that's a really weak word for the horrible, horrible thing to hear, but... God, what a dick. I'm sorry that happened.
What a dick.
Back to Maiden Chelsea.
Back to Maiden Chelsea.
So, tweeting cheerfully. At the time, I was doing a lot of writing for a website called Sabotage Times. Mm-hmm. This was in the last year of Bliss. I started doing it because I was trying to look for other work, knowing that, basically, I wasn't going to progress at Bliss or earn any more money until, you know, somebody... left or died, and that was not going to happen. It was a tiny team. I was doing loads, but, you know, budgets were just being cut and cut and cut, and I was just so, you know, aware that once you've been somewhere for kind of more than a couple of years, it's a long time, and it's good to progress, and also I just wanted to earn more money. So applied for jobs everywhere. I didn't even get, like, emails back. Sometimes I'd get sort of the standard, thank you for your application. The one that really stung was I applied for a job with our biggest rivals, Sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, love clearly, Sugar. You know, if I'm going to go anywhere, it's, you know, this is the logical place. And I don't think I heard anything back. And I just thought, oh my God, what's wrong with me?
Hole of shame, swallow me up.
I mean, in the meantime, I have now met and befriended the truly lovely and amazing woman. Hiya, Corinne. who's actually at Vetmanow. Corinne Redfern is she's up for some amazing humanitarian journalist award, and she's been at Marie Claire, and she's done tons of like amazing things with refugees. She's a really, really talented journalist and writer. She's brilliant. But she was my opposite number, and she'd been kind of interning for that job for a year, so she totally deserved it. But it's so weird now, like comparing our experiences and the spooky similarities. I mean, Sugar was cooler because it was in London, and it was a very stylish publishers that do lots of exciting glossy magazines, and we did like the Panini sticker albums. That was our other so I was writing for Sabotage Times for free to build a portfolio and to just prove that I had some experience beyond writing for teenagers, because, and I remember thinking that was unfair. Everyone's like, well, you know, how do we know you could write for an adult audience? I'm like, well, I think writing for teenagers is actually harder than what you do, so yeah, but obviously that does not get you jobs. So anyway, doing this, and I was writing lots of, and I was kind of experimenting a bit, and having been quite, you know, teenage friendly, for about three pieces, I thought, yeah, I'm going to like write myself sexy, I'm going to be that sort of cool, you know, girl about town,
girl
like
about
racy,
town.
You know, sexploit things, and obviously convincing no one and sounding like a bit of a bell end, and then realised actually if I'm going to write and be funny, the best thing I can do is to just throw myself under the bus. So yeah, one of the editors at Sabotage said, do you want to write about this? Obviously still not getting paid, but I was just so, you know, flattered and joyful that somebody actually wanted me to do it, and I was like, sure. And I thought it was really, 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 really fun. And I was doing it alongside my day job, and I didn't have access to like any previews then. So I was just taking tons of notes, watching it live, and then doing it on the bus, getting up at 6 o'clock to sort of file so it'd be kind of ready in time. And yeah, every week there was a sort of a flicker of, I noticed like maybe five people were reading it and leaving like lovely comments and having these sort of really intense chats about what's going on. And then that number sort of grew and grew and grew. And since then it's it was in the Mirror for a little bit, and now it's at the Debrief, which I think it's ideal home. I'm very happy.
I just love it. I find it so, so funny. I'm obsessed with the show, and I really shouldn't be, because I was at school with some of the people in it.
Oh, who? You say, or will that colour my judgement?
No, that's fine, I think. I was at school with Rosie Fortescue and Louise Thompson.
Oh, God, I feel really awful in the early ones. I used to really go for Rosie. I mean, she was very much a kind of a fun sponge back in the day. She'd be like, in every episode, so...
what's going on with you? I hear things are shit.
Come on. Who's your favourite character?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have a lot of love for Ollie Locke. I'm really glad to see him back. The weird thing about this show is I think so many people love it and appreciate it in different ways and either kind of live for the drama or live for the sheer silliness of it. And it's weird that, no, you know, career-wise, I'm not sure anyone cared that I was at Bliss for so long. I do. I had such a lovely time there and I think I really did learn a lot of stuff. I think if I'd just been like let loose, you know, pissing about and sort of crafting my own columns and, you know, without any working with editors and working to really strict deadlines, I think I would not be, you know, able to do what I do in the way that I do it now.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I get hired for other things, they're like, we like Made in Chelsea, so do you want to write this harrowing piece about bullying?
Sure. What's your favourite kind of article to write?
Oh, that's a really good question. This is going to sound really bad off the top of my head, I would say. One where I can be, I can write jokes that requires very little in the way of research. I do, I've got a couple of magazine pieces that I'm doing at the moment, and having longer deadlines and anything that's kind of more involved, I feel so much dread and anxiety. I've just got so much more time to worry about it, and I probably don't spend any more time writing it. I just spend more time worrying because it feels like it's a big deal and I'm going to get it wrong. But if someone says, can you file this in an hour, 2 hours, it's a bit like sitting an exam, and I think, well, this is the best I can do under the circumstances, so, you know, whatever happens, I met the deadline, and that was the main thing. So there's just less time for me to freak out about it, which is, occasionally I do, and it's lovely, and you get a commission in, you're, you know, well, I am joyful for moments like, hurrah, money to live, and also, you know, it's always nice to be wanted, and, you know, when you've worked on someone, and, you know, they've had a brilliant idea, and I think, this is the sort of piece I'd like to read, so I'm excited about writing it, and then I think, oh my god, and I always do it, because I think my terror of not doing it is just always slightly bigger and has the edge on my terror of doing it.
So, finally, what is the number one piece of advice you would give to someone who wants to become a writer?
I think I'm going to try and be able to just do one piece and not go off on a tangent. I think the first thing is to just do it. I think what I've just said, writing can be frightening, and I think we're capable of making it into a really big thing in our heads. That's why I did not even try to get a writing job first off, because I was like, no, achieving your dreams, that doesn't happen to people like me. I'll just do the safe thing, and the safe thing was not quite right. So I think, you know, just, you know, sit and do. But with that, and this is where I'm sneaking in some other advice, to know it really does take quite a lot of work. Sometimes people ask me for advice, and basically they're saying they want me to kind of distill what's taken me nearly 10 years into a paragraph they can kind of go off and use and be, you know, doing what I'm doing tomorrow. And I think, you know, to be patient. Also, sorry, this is annoying as well. I think it is really good to find a job where there's writing to do, even if it's quite tedious. I have a friend who's now a very successful writer, and he spent a horrible, horrible, hideous year. I think he was like on a website writing descriptions of cars, not even like fun descriptions, just, you know, and it has a 2-litre engine. It's just, and it was a really grim place to work. And I think, not that anyone should make themselves miserable, but also there is enormous value in the getting the discipline right first. God, this is going to sound pretentious and awful, but I think of Picasso learning to paint formally before he could paint in his Picasso way. So to just, you know, to keep at it. And also people will ask you to change things and do it differently. And like, it's horrible because writing's so personal and you do.
Yeah, I've had work edited before and been quite upset.
And sometimes it's about length. And I think the more writing you do, the less precious you get about it. And I think that's important. And also, I've been at a place where I probably shouldn't say it for legal reasons, I might get into trouble, but there's a really, 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 really high profile, legendary feminist writer who was commissioned to do something, did something different, and you know, the piece was not anything close to the brief. The editor said, can you do what I asked you to do, please? And had edits and things, and the famous feminist sort of said, no, I won't do it. So I find that really, really comforting, because whenever I get tons of ads back from an editor, I'm like, oh, they hate me, I'll never work again, they think I'm terrible. But I'm like, hey, if X had that, I can just, you know, get on it and do it and be humble. And I think it's that mix of, I think, really believing in yourself and what you have to offer, and not being, you know, not kind of betraying it, but also knowing there's that, you know, Devil Wears Prada, millions of girls or guys or whoever, you know, there's, you really do have to be a mix of, I think, very, 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 very good and nice to work with and polite and file on time.
Always deliver on time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, one piece, Daisy, one.
So much advice. Thank you so much, Daisy. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to me.
It's been really, really fun. Thank you for having me. It's been
so nice. Thank you very much.
That's all for this week. Don't forget that you can find me on Instagram at deliciouslystella, or you can drop me an email at deliciouslystella@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.